Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Right now, though, we want to go back to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And we bring in super friend of the show. I call him the Iron Man. He is Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com and 92.3 The Fan. Always does a stellar job no matter what he's doing. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm great. How are you?
We're doing good. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of some NBA talk, and I do want to talk some NFL talk with you, what is the current situation with the National Kickball League? I have been hearing all kinds of rumors that they are talking about going to playing surfaces with dust only, and I've also heard that they're going to go from the 12-pound ball that you guys normally use to the 8-pound ball, the smaller one, with the red rubber. And there's also talk about changing the stripe and putting a stripe on the National Kickball League kickball. Any facts to the things that I'm completely making up?
No, none. 12 pounds. Right. Could you imagine playing with a 12-pound ball? That would be really, really difficult for out-of-shape 30-year-olds. Come on now.
I see a lot of ankle kicks rather than being able to get the toe of your foot into it, you know? Like
to
the ball would be
in
rolling
perspective,
in.
Okay. During my heyday, my bowling heyday, when I was a member of the varsity bowling team at St. Ed's, I had a 15.5-pound bowling ball. So I don't think that I could pick up a 12-pound kickball at this point in time and start throwing it around the field. I don't think I could do that.
All those people on Twitter that say you're worthless and weak, it's now shining through. I'm so disappointed in you. So disappointed. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great. I'm safe. I'm healthy. And in this era that we're now in, that's the most important thing. So I'll take it.
You had a good story earlier this week talking to Craig Ela, who was on the morning show today. And Craig said, you know, I don't recall Ron Harper saying those things back in the day. When he told Lenny Wilkins, apparently, according to Ron, I've got MJ. And Lenny said, nope. And Ron then had a couple of expletive deletives on the documentary, and away we go. What'd you think when you heard that from Craig saying, I don't recall him saying that?
I think I looked at my wife like, oh my goodness, this is gold. because I didn't know what he was going to say. You know, I reached out to Craig, I reached out to Mark Price, and I reached out to other guys from those Cavs teams because I wanted to do a story of just like what it was like to be on the other end of those teams and of the Jordan era and having to relive it by watching The Last Dance. And then the night before that I was scheduled to talk to Mark Price, all of a sudden Ron Harper makes the comments that he makes about Craig Ela and wanting to guard MJ. And I'm like, oh my goodness, well, I think my story is going to go in a much different direction here. So I kind of pivoted and I just said, hey, you know, what did you think about that? That's what I said to Mark. And then when I got Craig Ela on the phone, I asked him the same thing. And I talked to Ela for close to an hour about everything from that Cavs era and about guarding MJ and his mentality when it came to guarding MJ and why he was always getting the defensive assignment against MJ instead of Ron Harper. And I just thought the stuff that he said to me was really, really illuminating. And he made it clear that a big reason why the Cavs used the strategy that they did defensively with Ela against Harper is because Harper was the offensive guy and Ela was the defensive guy, and nobody was surprised in the huddle when Lenny Wilkins said, hey, Craig, you've got MJ on the final shot, because he had been guarding him basically the entire fourth quarter. So I thought it was a surprise that Elo was as open with me about that specifically, and it was clear that he kind of took some offense to what Ron Harper had to say during the Last Dance episode 3.
So Jeff and I had this conversation this morning, and you know, we've been around the team for years, or at least stories of the team, and you know, had some of the access. I don't ever remember hearing that story before, and Jeff had said the same. Had you ever heard that the Ron Harper tried to step out and say, I told Lenny they should have, you know, come on. I don't know that I've ever heard this story before.
I haven't either, and Craig said that it wasn't said in the huddle. And it was interesting when I was talking to Craig Elo about it. He mentioned specifically that the Cavs had one timeout after the Bulls called their timeout. And in the first timeout, the only thing that they talked about was who was going to get the ball. And everybody knew who was going to get the ball. It was going to be MJ. So during the Bulls timeout, that's really all they talked about in the huddle, according to Elo and according to Price, who I also talked to. And then the Cavs were always planning on using their timeout after the Bulls kind of showed the set that they were going to have and where everybody was going to line up on the court for that inbounds play. And then they had a second huddle. But even in that huddle, nobody said to me that they heard Ron Harper say, I'm guarding MJ. I want MJ. And I thought it was interesting, the theory that Craig Elo brought up is that Ron Harper and Michael Jordan became really, really close during their time in Chicago. They played golf together. They started playing cards together. And maybe because of the relationship that the two had between each other, that maybe MJ was less willing to criticize Harper from those days and more willing to criticize Elo and saying that it was a mistake that Elo was on him instead of Harper. And who knows what the reason behind all of it was. But nobody remembers, the people that I talked to from those teams, nobody remembers Ron Harper saying to Lenny, I want MJ, I want to guard him. And Elo even said it to me in conversation. Maybe that happened on the side. Maybe it happened where nobody could hear it. But yeah, given the magnitude of that moment and that timeout, you think that that would have been heard by everybody if it was actually said. I don't know.
We had the mayor, Brad Sellers, on
that. It's coming out now.
Yeah, isn't it though? We had the mayor,
really,
Brad Sellers.
It's easy for somebody like Ron Harper to say, like, I would have done a better job on MJ. You know what I mean? Because he didn't actually have an opportunity to do that and prove that. So it's very, very easy for the guy who's not on the other end of it to just be like, oh, yeah, I would have shut him down. Of course I would have. I would have played better defense because there's no way to prove it one way or the other.
Bottom line, great shot. Brad Sellers the other day on the show said he was surprised that Lenny didn't guard the inbounds pass that Brad threw, and he had Larry Nance kind of trying to double-team Michael a little bit. So that's one thing that will now not just live in Cleveland sports history, but now it gets a whole nother layer. So there's that for us out of the documentary, which, by the way, Chris, I've enjoyed. I think it's been really good and pretty insightful. Some different things I didn't know.
I agree. And I was talking to Mark Price about this, and the thing that we both said to each other was we just enjoy the backstories and the relationships and the behind-the-scenes type stuff. That, to me, is always the most fascinating and illuminating. And you can really see it. And the other thing that really stands out to me from the first four episodes, guys, is just the number of different personalities that are on the roster and the kind of coach that's required to manage those personalities. And I think it really paints Phil Jackson in a great light because he was able to get the most out of all those guys. And so many people say, well, when you have a bunch of talent, it's really, really easy to get it to all come together and it's going to work just because you're overly talented compared to the other team that you're playing against. But so much about being a head coach is getting the guys to fit and managing those personalities. And I think Phil Jackson comes across great because you see how crazy some of those guys were on that team and you see how crazy some of those teams were. That I don't think it was very, very easy to coach that team, despite the fact that they had all that talent in Chicago.
Chris, let's get back to up to speed on what's going on with the NBA right now. What are your thoughts of the Disney plan that's kind of floating out there right now, or any other thought that might come into play about having the NBA play this season?
So I've said this for a while, guys. I think so many conversations that are going on right now are just all hypotheticals. You know, they're talking about everything And I think their goal still remains, if they can safely, to crown a champion. And they have a lot of things that they have to figure out before they get to that point. And, you know, I get a lot of questions about what's going to happen with the NBA draft, what's going to happen with free agency, what's going to happen with some of these other off-season activities. And I keep saying the same thing in response. I don't think those conversations are being had right now, because I think so much of the focus of everybody is there a way to start back up? And that is taking precedent. And I don't think there's an easy answer until there's more testing available. And I don't want to get into a political debate about that or what the government can do and can't do. But that's where I think the NBA is right now, guys, is until they have more testing and until they don't feel like they're taking testing away from the other people in the country that need it so much more, I don't know that the NBA can even proceed. I think it's a nice, good step to open up practice facilities at some point here in the next week or two. But even that, like, there are so many stipulations involved with that and so many rules in place to try and protect these players just in that kind of environment that you start extrapolating that over 30 teams, maybe one city, a bunch of different hotels, and you start to come up with a bunch of other questions when you throw out any hypothetical that you think makes sense in your own head. So does Disney have the facilities? Sure, I think they have the hotels. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think Las Vegas does as well, because Las Vegas is the city that holds the G League Showcase, where a lot of executives go and players go, and they're holed up, and they play on a number of different courts, and they stay in a bunch of different hotels that are just in proximity. But until there is widespread testing, and until the NBA has the ability to get that without harming the testing available to the rest of the country, I just don't know how anything can proceed.
Chris Fedor joining us, covers the Cavaliers for the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com, and of course you can hear him here on 92.3 The Fan as well. Chris, does your gut tell you, and obviously there are unknowns in this, I mean, everything's unknown, but does your gut tell you that there is a certain month, time, when they have to just say, hey, this season isn't going to conclude with a champion, and we're just going to have to call it quits? I mean, would it be August? Would it be, I would think that might be early. Would it be October when the new season is supposed to start? What would it possibly be?
So I was on the conference call with Adam Silver, I think 2 weeks ago, and the NBA commissioner said at that time, in response to that particular question, Jeff and Andy, that there is no drop-dead date. I find that hard to believe, because from everybody that I have talked to about this, for anything that the NBA wants to do to finish out this season, it has to be an 18-month plan. It can't just be this season and not think about next season and how next season can be affected. So I think the NBA is looking at it from that lens of, we understand that if we push this back and if we do play games into August or September or whatever the case may be, then we're going to have to push back next regular season or maybe shorten next regular season. So everything I think that the NBA is considering when it comes to starting back up is through that lens of an 18-month plan. So because of that, and because they're looking at it that way in such a big picture, I don't know that the drop-dead date is necessarily September, or if it's July, or if it's June. I think if they had to, guys, start next season in December or January, I think they'd be willing to do that if it means crowning a champion. So if you're looking at the calendar, these guys would have to have some kind of off season. There would have to be some kind of mental break. And if you're just being honest about the realities of the calendar, you feel like the drop dead date should be something maybe September, October. But even that could be pushing it and making for a tighter off season before the following season starts. So my gut tells me that it can't go much longer than September. But I think we're still a few weeks, maybe even months away from figuring out when that drop-dead date has to be.
Chris, let me throw this question at you just because we're going to talk about it next segment. Let me just throw a hypothetical at you. Let's just say that, you know, testing kits are available, but they're not, they just still don't seem to be available as quick as maybe the medical community would like them to be for anybody that would walk in any one of our testing centers here in Northeast Ohio. Yet they can be readily accessible to athletes. Would you be okay, or do you think that there's a sense of nationalism, maybe is the word, to get sports back up and going, say, like baseball, if, say, they gave more testing to athletes than they would the general public? It would be a very hot-button topic. It would be a very – I think there'd be people protesting outside games if this happened. But I'm curious if you think it would be better for our national psyche to try to get some of these guys back out on the field, even if testing isn't up to 100% of where it could be. What do you think?
I think the optics on it would be really, really bad, especially if these sports leagues are taking testing away from other people that need it in terms of healthcare workers and in terms of older people that are more at risk, in terms of other people that have pre-existing health issues that makes them more at risk. And I honestly think that that is something that the NBA is considering, and I think it's something that the NBA is very cognizant of. Just how that would look in this kind of climate right now. And I think other sports leagues are looking at the same thing. And you can say, on the other hand, that sports is something that drives the economy in a unique way. So getting sports back could help spark up the economy. But I think if you're doing it at the expense of those other things, it's a dangerous game to play, and I think it's a slippery slope. I just don't think that the NBA wants that kind of stain attached to them, and I don't think other sports leagues would want that as well. And I think until there is more testing, I don't think other sports leagues are going to be able to proceed, and I don't think they're going to want to proceed because everything has a give and take here. Everything when it comes to this virus, everything when it comes to the economy, everything when it comes to dates and a timeline. There's always a give and take. There's always a yeah, but. And I think the yeah, but of how the NBA would look in this kind of environment, I think it's something that would affect them a little bit too much to go that direction.
And don't you think they're the only ones that really have the experience with this? Because I just remember when the league shut down, like, we knew really quick that Rudy Gobert had tested positive and that people were saying, wait a minute, how are these athletes getting tests when – you know, folks in New York weren't, or anywhere else in the United States. So I think that they've had a taste of this already. Yeah, it's a good point.
And they got a lot of backlash from it, if you think about it.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll throw one more hypothetical at you. And this is something we were talking about with Menigan, and I'm curious to hear what your take is. Let's just say, you know, we don't have there's no vaccine, and we hit August, and government feels comfortable enough to say, hey, people can go back into the ballparks or they can go back in the arena to go watch. Somebody hands you somebody says, Chris, I got two tickets, center court for the Cavs in their big game tonight against, although it's going to be tough to say this for the Cavs for this season. I've got two tickets center court for the best NBA game. Are you going to take them? Or do you think you're going to be hesitant on wanting to take those and just go, yeah, that's all right?
I think I'd be hesitant on it. I'm hesitant to go to the grocery store at this point in time. Think about the precautions that I'm taking just to go to the grocery store, because the thing is, like, how you view this virus and how you view this situation is not necessarily how that other stranger that you're in contact with is going to view it as well. So you don't know if they're taking the precautions. You don't know what they're doing. I was at the post office the other day. I didn't want to go, but I had to go. I had to mail something. And they had these things on the ground to separate. They were little little pieces of tape. And they blocked it off into quadrants. So when you were in line, you were supposed to stand in a specific quadrant. And they were all 6 feet away. The lady behind me literally came within a foot of me because she wanted to use the countertop to fill something out. And I had to be the person to look at her like, what are you doing, lady? Are you kidding me? Like, there are these tape strips on the floor to let you know where you're supposed to stand so that you don't get within 6 feet of somebody and so that you take the necessary precautions. And she just threw them out the window because she wanted to use the counter. Now, that's just one example But you encounter that same sort of thing at the grocery store. You encounter that same sort of thing if you go anywhere. So you just don't know what the person next to you is doing or not doing. And I personally would be hesitant, because as much as none of us are in control of this when it comes to the timeline or anything right now, we're all at the mercy of this virus. Like, you want to be able to control at least some semblance of this, right? You want to be able to control, like, who you contact, where you go, the precautions that you take when it comes to washing your hands and not touching your face. And the minute that you go out in public, you're losing a little bit of that control. So if I had a chance to go to a sporting event when it was still so close to the timing of it all, I probably would pass that up, because I think it's just too dangerous.
Chris, thank you very much. You know we always appreciate you. We read you every day, and I always love listening to you when you're on the air with us. On the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, 1 year from now when you're at the kickball banquet and you've won the home run title and you're giving your speech as they hand you the trophy for MVP, I want you to mention me in your speech that I had you training with 12-pound kickballs, and that when the regular kickball came at you, it just seemed like a feather as you were knocking them out of the park, my friend.
Sounds great. I just hope we can get to that point where we can do those activities again sometime soon.
All right. Don't forget me at the banquet. Thank you, Chris. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, guys.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.